All right, welcome to another episode of the Clippers Beat Podcast. It's your host, Nikki Kay. And today I've got my good friend on, Kyle Goon. Now, Kyle, let's hold our horses here. He actually covers the Los Angeles Lakers for the OC Register, Southern California News Group ownership. But he has spent a lot of time around the Clippers, especially in their postseason run. Kyle, how's it going? I know it's a crazy week in LA for you once again.
Yeah, there's never a shortage of drama around the LA teams, and even though it's off season, that seems to be when even some stuff is cranked up here with the Lakers. So not as much as the Clippers, but I'm sure as we get toward July, there'll be plenty of buzz for both teams.
Yeah, it's you have to be on constantly. It's like one thing after the next. If it's not a rumor, then it's Magic Johnson appearing on ESPN talk shows, and then it's head coaching press conferences. But before we talk a little bit about the drama going on the other side of the Staples Center locker room, I want to kind of pick your brains and just get your general impression of what you saw with the Clippers in your time, kind of, because I believe you helped out Miriam, right, towards the end of their postseason run. And yeah, just talk to me about what you kind of gained from covering the team in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a fun little experience to see a team that's scrappy, a team that, personally at the trade deadline, I kind of thought, okay, well, they're no longer trying to make the playoffs. They traded Tobias Harris, and that's kind of their sign of, you know, it's not about this year, it's about next year. And I kind of went back and forth with a couple colleagues about that, on whether or not that constitutes tanking. And just fast forward a couple months, and they really gave the Warriors a really good push and were a really competitive team. And I was really surprised at how that group came together, how much contribution they got out of their rookies, and just how competitive they were. I mean, it really came across that at that time, at the trade deadline, that they kind of decided, hey, we're not giving up. The players and coaches decided, this isn't a year that we're going to waste. And they really, I think, got a lot out of it just by being in the playoffs and being able to compete.
Absolutely. Now, can you give me any instances which kind of put in stark contrast for you the experience of being in the Lakers locker room versus the Clippers locker room?
I think it's just, with the Lakers, as the season wound down, it was just kind of the intensity got a little lower, and there were sort of some guys kind of shrugging their shoulders. And I just think that the Clippers, facing the situation they faced, going against, possibly the best dynasty the modern NBA has ever seen, just showed a sort of attitude about just refusing to quit and just sort of not really, maybe in some sense, not really understanding that that the odds were stacked so much against them. I mean, I think they knew that, but it was also an interesting situation to kind of see some of the younger guys kind of not be in their own heads and not, not really feel pressure in that situation. And I think that speaks a lot to the atmosphere that Doc Rivers created, the atmosphere that the veterans there created. Not to compare too much, but it was just obviously being in the Lakers locker room toward the end of a losing season was very different.
Oh, I can only imagine. And I understand exactly how that might be a contrasting vibe in general. Now, we had some news out of the NBA today in general, and this week, on top of everything you've been dealing with the Lakers, we've got the all-defensive and all-rookie teams have been named. Now, I want to start with the all-defensive team because it was released today. What do you think about Patrick Beverley getting scorned?
Yeah, I was really surprised. I think he's just a really scrappy all-around player, first of all. When you look at the list, I was was a little surprised Marcus Smart maybe got as high as he did, but you know, there's some good defenders on the list. Although you got to be surprised at Pat Beverly, just sort of his doggedness, his energy, sort of radiating. I mean, Kevin Durant got the better of him, but
yeah,
I mean, who doesn't Kevin Durant get the better of?
I know, right?
So it's just kind of a trick. I mean, he just kind of brings it every night, and I think when you kind of see that unfold on the screen, he doesn't really have the name of some of the other guys, and the Clippers obviously just don't have the bandwidth of some of the franchises that are represented on that list. But I do think that, you know, Pat Beverly is just a guy who, for one thing, is just never intimidated by his assignment, just takes it on. I mean, that KD assignment, you could tell he was scrapping. And there were nights it did seem he did get to him. And, you know, he just is a ball of energy. He's just never gives up. So yeah. I think that counts for a lot on lists like that. And maybe because he's not sort of in one of those high bandwidth franchises, he doesn't get the respect he deserves.
Shifting focus to the rookies, Shai and Sham both making second team. Should there have been a case that either one of those belonged on first team, especially Shai?
Yeah, I think Shai definitely had a case. I think it was tricky again, because when you look at some of the guards who are on the team, I mean, it's hard to move that around a little bit. That being said, I mean, Shai, tell what other rookie are we talking about that had a meaningful role on a playoff team? And I think in there it lies, you know, one of his biggest contributions. I mean, he translated to winning and directly. And, you know, Luka and DeAndre Ayton and Trae Young and all those guys had great statistical seasons and were undoubtedly the motor for their teams. But Shai, even though he wasn't always the best player on the floor, and, you know, a couple nights he was, he played a role to winning. And that really matters to me. And it's so hard for young players to win in this league, especially when they're one of the top guys on a team. And I think that really speaks to what Shai was able to bring, even in the playoffs, because he had some great playoff games, too. And then, obviously, in Landry Shamet, you know, contributing to playoff push himself, you know, being a meaningful player and scorer and being a meaningful piece of that trade, when maybe at first glance it looked like he was a bit of a throw-in, that really spoke well of his career in the NBA, and I think he's got a long one ahead. And I mean, it's really interesting when, you know, I've talked to a couple people about this, is just what is Shai's comparison as a player? And it's really an interesting question because he's so unique, and you know, just to see him is to kind of underestimate him, because he looks kind of spindly and he's not that tall, but athletically, obviously, he's so gifted. He's such a leaper. He can score, he can block, he can do all kinds of things, and it's really interesting to kind of see. I wonder what he'll become when he sort of blossoms into his NBA prime, and what that kind of player is.
Who did you end up leaving or end up concluding his most likely comp would be?
You know, I don't know if I came to a conclusion on that. He has such utility and versatility. And, you know, I think obviously there's polished for him to become a better shooter and more of an outside threat, I would guess. You know, he's so dynamic in this way that's really hard to explain. And he's not exactly like a gunner, and he's not exactly, you know, a just sort of this effortless ball handler, but he's got a lot of good skills. Yes. As opposed to elite skills is how I'd put it.
And I agree with you, especially when it's difficult to articulate, because I wouldn't I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you wouldn't classify him as a pass first point guard, right? But at there were nights when he would disappear from the stat line, but still find a way to make an impact on the game and right. still learning how to assert his own will, I guess, like you said, as a scorer with and utilize that athleticism.
Right, right. And yeah, I'm just really curious to see kind of in the upcoming years what buttons Doc kind of chooses to push, what role he kind of starts to envelop on that team. Because it's going to be really interesting, especially if and when they bring in a superstar this summer. I mean, if they brought in Kawhi this summer, to see what Shai would be outside of a guy like that. So it's so much of his game, I think, is going to be context and what he's asked to do, because he does so many things well.
An exciting future for sure. Now you're getting to the good stuff, the juicy stuff. So we've time and time again hit home the notion that everyone in Clippers land is hearing Kawhi, even though who knows what Kawhi is thinking right now, besides focusing, on the Bucks, what Kawhi will do. From your context with the Lakers, is that a team that thinks Kawhi could end up in purple and gold? Or what have you heard in terms of what, you know, the Claw's inclination might be moving forward?
It's hard to say because it's still ongoing and Toronto is still making its case right now.
Yeah.
And none of us really know the value that has. If they win game five and then they're one win away from going to the finals, I mean, that, and
who knows?
They can kind of sell, hey, this is like a, we'll do what it takes to build a contender around you. And now you're a part of us, you know, possibly going to the finals for the first time. Like that's a big story, is kind of how other people have termed it. And so I have heard that Toronto's sort of treatment of Kawhi has been sort of what he wanted,
the all-star
perhaps San Antonio just sort of had this everyone's going to treat the same mentality that kind of stems from having Tim Duncan as your star for so long. And I think Kawhi just is not Tim Duncan. I mean, no one is. And it's just Tim Duncan was such a unique kind of figure that was the perfect person at the perfect time. And Kawhi just sought a little bit more, I don't know whether you'd call it like red carpet treatment, but just appreciation and sort of a natural sort of top tier role, I guess.
Organization.
And I think, I mean, from that perspective, I think he's gotten that. And it's just about, hey, do you want to come to LA? Do you want to live in Southern California? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? I mean, that's such a mystery to everyone at this point, I think, of what Kawhi is feeling about how important those factors are.
The only thing we know about Kawhi is that he's a fun guy.
Yeah, he's a super fun guy.
Yeah. Oh, that was a pretty spot on impression right there, Kyle. No, I agree with you. Okay, so now shifting to a little more of a expressive or emotive free agent or upcoming free agent that whose name also starts with a K, Kevin Durant, who's been back on social media in his time out during these playoffs with the calf strain, which I think is probably a little bit worse than just a strain. Kevin Durant, teams that you would rank likely as where he lands. I'm going to give you, the New York Knicks, the Warriors, the Clippers, and the Nets, and the Lakers. We'll throw them in there for you, Kyle. Where do you rank those in terms of what you think Kevin Durant might be, highest likelihood of Kevin Durant's future?
I mean, every signal has kind of pointed to people think he's going to the Knicks.
Yeah.
And they've kind of laid out the runway, and they've talked very boldly about, oh, well, yeah, we think it's going to be a great summer for us. And it feels hard to sort of just push that aside as just sort of typical Knicks boldness. I think they feel like that they're going to get him. There is sort of this undeniable weirdness. You were around the Warriors for the playoffs. I was around the Warriors for the playoffs. Yeah. And people I talked to around the Warriors just kind of said, you know, he just seems, just not fulfilled in some way by some, even though he might be the best player in the world, even though he might be on the verge of winning his third consecutive ring. And I think it would be a step too far to say that, you know, he's not essential there. I mean, he obviously, has helped the Warriors dominate the NBA the last 2 years. But you can also see when he's not playing, the Warriors have a winning style and they have a lot of pep and they have a lot of energy that just seems to not always be there when Kevin Durant's on the floor. I just don't know that sort of in the 2016 Warriors that we think of, the 73-1 Warriors, I'm not sure the blend ever sort of completely took place, even though, you know, they may have a lot of, you know, personal relationships and there may be some good feelings, even though he and Draymond had a spat in the middle of the year, but it's just something is off. And there, I think there's just this wide feeling that, Kevin Durant is going to find a way to move on. So I don't know where anyone ranks after that. I think it would be a big coup for the Lakers if they somehow convinced him to come, but the Lakers are just focused on trying to right their own ship at this moment and try and get anyone. I mean, they're kind of in a wounded state where, you know, Magic saying the general manager can't be trusted. I mean, how
I know.
How does that carry when you're going into a free agency meeting? So it's just really a really strange unfolding of events. I would describe the Lakers right now as just trying to regroup more so than being the favorite for any free agent that's out there right now.
Which is unfortunate. I know. And because especially, I mean, we talk about the Kevin Draymond spat that occurred earlier in the season. And if we also recall, Kevin had comments on what the environment around LeBron would be like in that Lakers locker room. And he used the word, what, toxic, right?
And I mean, that was on the record, totally. And maybe he cleaned that up with LeBron a little bit, but I don't think he ever totally backed down from that. So,
yeah.
It's kind of funny that he would say something like that when, you know, it's not exactly like everything is sunshine and roses around Kevin either on winning his team in the NBA. So it's just weird that he would say that and go out of his way to say that. And I think it would be surprising to see him want to team up with LeBron after saying something like that, unless we're sort of being gaslit in the most surprising way possible. So,
well, and especially when you consider the state of affairs right now for the Lakers, they haven't really done anything to make the room less toxic, so to speak, right? And then I'll tell you this much, though. I think the Warriors, I'm having fun watching the Warriors again. And whether they're out there to prove a point that, like, yes, they can lose the, you know, they're still, they shouldn't be written off just because they lost one of the best players in the world, maybe the best player in the world, which is, what an embarrassment of riches to have, right? Like, hey, we're still the 73 win Warriors just because we lost Kevin Durant. Don't send us packing or don't write us off right now. It's ridiculous, but it's been fun watching them again.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, I think that can only fuel more speculation that KD's headed elsewhere.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, listen, you saw the same series I did, and Kevin Durant was essential for that series, because just the way they operated, and when that ball motion offense is not going quite right, and when they can't get the movement they want, and when Steph and Clay aren't hitting. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, no, it's a mouthful. And Steph, then, yeah, Steph and Clay aren't hitting.
Then it's like, then you have the best isolation player in the world.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, oh, well, this is our trump card. When our unstoppable offense does actually get stopped, we have the most unstoppable one-on-one player in basketball.
Yeah.
And I just, like, that is just, like, such a weapon and such a trump card that answers any defense. But then again, I mean, they're still beating the crap out of teams with that original offense that they had. So they could lose KD as a shot creator, as weird as it sounds, and still be a good team. I don't know if that makes them the automatic favorite next year. That probably hurts them in that sense, but they're still a good team without him.
Yeah, it's absurd. It's truly absurd. So tell me, to kind of wrap this up, just tell me a little bit about what the last week has been like, the past couple of days even has been like for you, from Magic Johnson's appearance on ESPN talk show to, you know, the coaching press conference, which probably was more about Rob Pelinka answering questions than anything else. What did you take away?
Yeah, I mean, I think the organization is trying to be respectful of Magic, and sort of understanding that kind of pointing the finger back at Magic doesn't really help you much, because he's Magic Johnson. So I think Rob sort of being gracious in that sense, and trying to take the high road about, I enjoyed working with Magic, and I'm saddened to hear this, it's not true. I think that's his way of acceding that, he's not going to win a mudslinging battle with Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
And I think their mentality is, you know what, let's kind of let everyone rain on a parade right now. We'll kind of work from within. We're going to build a strong organization from within, and then we'll show everybody come the season. Sort of to borrow a thought from Ramona Shelburne, it's just the problem with that is you kind of let everyone else do your talking for you.
Yeah.
And the person on the record is Magic, who, you know, just recently came from the organization. And then, you know, you're still making some decisions that just, don't ring as just basketball first priorities. And you know, the whole situation, and it's not to speak ill of Frank Vogel, but the context in which they hired him as, you know, essentially the third choice, just really, really just doesn't give him an overwhelming vote of confidence coming into this office. And it's nothing against him. It's just the Lakers aren't really helping him get out to the right footing that he needs to be on. And it's just tricky ground for them, because it's just everyone's kind of expecting things to not go well. Everyone's kind of expecting, oh, well, it looks like Jason Kidd is in place to take over. And the Lakers are just trying to build some sense of normalcy and trying to build some sense of, hey, here's our identity. Here's how we're going to get back to the playoffs. And I mean, I think it could work. It's just they have to get used to this idea that throughout the summer that they're going to be scrutinized and doubted, and that may have sort of a ripple effect out to the free agents that they hope to recruit. So that would be a bad situation for the summer if they've been undermined in that sense. But, you know, they're not backing down from their approach. So, something's got to give.
No, absolutely. And I mean, it's just incredible. This is unprecedented, where you've got the Clippers front office being epitomized as a great model for NBA front offices, and what Steve Ballmer's doing with the team is just incredible. And then the disarray of the Lakers in stark contrast is just, it's remarkable. And it's going to be really interesting on the other side of this free agency period, if there were any free agents, considering both teams and who they end up going with in the long in for their future.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, it doesn't change, you know, the Lakers' money is going to be as good as anyone else's. And then it doesn't really change that the Lakers are going to be, you know, highly televised and highly marketed. And there is, you know, a certain prestige factor that players do buy into with purple and gold. That's just true. But yeah. At the same time, it's just when you weigh it against every other factor, especially competing for championships. I mean, do you really believe that the Lakers leadership is sort of in the right place to get you there? And that's a different question entirely. I mean, I think right now the Lakers' best case relies almost completely on LeBron and his legacy as a player and his willingness to share the stage and be a team player. And that's a lot of pressure to put on one guy on your team and one guy who's turning 35 in December. So it's just a lot going on for them. I think everyone feels that pressure. I think LeBron's going to feel that pressure. And there will be a lot of eyes on the Lakers in July, seeing if anyone's going to bite on their pitch.
I completely agree with you. It's going to be a fascinating couple months ahead. Now, Cal, a couple of things before you go. I want your Eastern Conference Finals prediction.
I think the Bucks will take it. I've been more impressed with them in the postseason than I was in the regular season, which is a ridiculous thing to say for a team that won over 60 games. But, you know, it's just there is really something to that idea of, you know, playoff series. You know, is that cast really as good? Everyone's tightening up their bench. And I think the Bucks supporting cast is just better than I thought they were. I mean, I think I was telling someone the other day, before the postseason, if you had asked me, would you rather have Kawhi's supporting cast or would you rather have Giannis's supporting cast? I would have gone with the Raptors
100%.
Almost as a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But Brooke Lopez has been better than I thought. Eric Bledsoe's been good. I think I was kind of just skeptical of Chris Middleton in the sense of, is he really an all-star type player? But he's been really good. Malcolm Brogdon, since he got back, has been great. Pat Connaughton has been just surprisingly a menace. I don't know how that is, but he is one. And so it's just there's just a lot of there's a lot to like about that Bucks team, how they compete, how hard they play, understanding their roles and just executing them. And I think when they get back home, they'll be pretty tough to beat.
Yeah, especially, I mean, the Eric Gordon's got to be better than, what, 20 minutes of action. So we'll see how that emerges. I'll take you on the Bucks. I had Raptors in six, so apparently I'm not, I don't know. If you had asked me after the first two games of the series, I would have been shaking my head. But, hey, it's an even slate now.
It's an even slate now.
Yeah. So, Kyle, thank you so much for giving your time. Where can listeners find your work, follow you, all that jazz?
Yeah, all my work is at ocregister.com. You know, but SoCal News Group is a huge chain of papers. So Orange County Register, LA Daily News. My Twitter is at Kyle Gohn. My Instagram is at Kyle Gohn. That's pretty much everything. So, hopefully I'll have some time off a little bit here and there, but you know, with the Lakers, it's always entertaining.
The never ending hamster wheel. You're such a rock star, and I look forward to following, intensely the content you put out there during this next month and a half almost. Whoa, July 1st is coming up quick.
Yeah, very quick. Huh?
But Kyle, thank you so much again. Once again, to everyone listening, you can find this podcast wherever you get your pods at or at clnsmedia.com. Woohoo, Kyle. Thank you.